We are in 1 Samuel chapter 1. 1 Samuel chapter 1. Let's look together at God's Word. There was a certain man from Ramathaim, a Zophite from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, son of Jehoram, son of Elihu, son of Tohu, son of Zoph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives. One was called Hannah, and the other Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion because he loved her and the Lord had closed her womb. And because the Lord had closed her womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons?" Once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. And she made a vow, saying, "O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head." As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long will you keep on getting drunk? Get rid of your wine." "Not so, my Lord," Hannah replied. "I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief." Eli answered, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him." She said, "May your servant find favor in your eyes." Then she went her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Early the next morning they arose and worshipped before the Lord, and then went back to their home at Ramah. Elkanah lay with Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah conceived and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, "Because I asked the Lord for him." When the man Elkanah went up with all his family to offer the annual sacrifice to the Lord and to fulfill his vow, Hannah did not go. She said to her husband, "After the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord, and he will live there always." "Do what seems best to you," Elkanah, her husband, told her. "Stay here until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord make good his word." So the woman stayed at home and nursed her son until she had weaned him. After he was weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a 3-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. When they had slaughtered the bull, they brought the boy to Eli, and she said to him, "As surely as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord." And he worshiped the Lord there. May God add his blessing to this reading from his holy and inspired word. Well, this is a beautiful story. And it's also kind of a painful story, because you have a woman who desperately wants what she doesn't have. Isn't that what we always want? I am amused from time to time as people remark in great frustration, why is it that the thing you're looking for is always in the last place you look? Have you ever heard somebody say that? Why is it always in the last place you look? And of course, the answer to that question is because you're not crazy. After you find it, you don't keep looking. Right? Of course it's in the last place you look. I mean, who finds it and then says, well, I need to look three or four more places? I mean, that would be goofy. Right? So, of course, whatever you're looking for is always in the last place you look. Well, likewise, a lot of people would say, well, of course what you want is what you don't have. But no, those are not the same. The joy of contentment comes in learning to want what you have. Learning to appreciate what you've got. And there are a whole lot of people who have a lot more than they are grateful for. They have been blessed. Hannah's husband says to her, why are you so downcast? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? And the obvious unspoken answer is, no. You know, I love you, but I want a son. Now, God is going to answer her prayer and God is going to give her a son. But God does that when she has already agreed to give him back to the Lord. So she's going to gain and lose her son. God will answer her prayer. God will give her what she requested. But God will do it in a context where she recognizes not only where her child comes from, but the fact that her child doesn't belong to her. He belongs to God. You know where children come from?
Oh, Pastor, I can't believe you're going to talk about that in front of this group. I mean, even if we know where children come from, we don't want to talk about it in a room full of people. I mean, that's embarrassing.
Well, it shouldn't be embarrassing. It's very biblical. It's a beautiful thing. God designed human reproduction to be a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing when a husband and wife celebrate their love in a way that honors God. That's a great thing. It's not a shameful thing. It's a beautiful thing. It's a private thing. But it's wonderful. But a lot of people don't realize that the Bible specifically says we should consider our children a gift from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is His reward. And so our children are not something we have earned or made. Oh, they made a baby. No, actually, God gave them a child. Okay? Children are a gift from the Lord. They're a blessing. We live in a culture where a lot of people don't understand that. Even a lot of people who go to church do not understand that children are a blessing. It was kind of fun. I was recently on a television broadcast. My wife and I got to watch a recording of it last night, and I was reminded as I sat there that I'm not the one with the most kids on the show. Kirk Cameron, who was the host of the program, has 6 children. I have 7. John Waller, the musician, was there, and he and his wife were about to have their 9th. So I'm the guy who only has 7 kids. Why would these people want so many children? Kirk said to John Waller, what are you, in competition with the Duggars? John Waller said, well, I'm trying, but so far we haven't caught up. Now, let me tell you something. By the way, John Waller adopted three of his kids from the Ukraine, which I thought was pretty cool. I think that's a great idea if God leads you to do it. Because that's what we did, and it was really good for us. But let me tell you something. Our children, whether by birth or by adoption, our children are a gift from the Lord, and we need to recognize that. And I'll tell you something else. It wasn't just Samuel whose mother needed to offer him back to the Lord, recognizing that our children come from God and belong to God. It's all of us. Our children are not ours in terms of ownership. They are ours in terms of stewardship. And we have a responsibility for which we will answer to God in terms of how we show His love to our children. And that love, if we're going to show it in a godly fashion, must include discipline. Because whoever fails to discipline his child hates his child. Don't say, well, you know, yeah, he's a little dickens, isn't he? I can't discipline him because I just love him. No, you don't love him. If you will not rein that child in, if you will not hold that child accountable, if you will not stop that child from doing things that are wrong, then you're not loving your child. You're failing to love your child. Is that clear? So see, there's a whole lot in this passage that's more than just an interesting story from long ago. This is instructive for us for right now and the future. Because it tells us the attitude that we're supposed to have toward children and toward the Lord. This woman wanted what she did not have. She wanted a child, and especially a son. And so, because she didn't have children, and her rival did, Well, remember it says at the beginning of the passage that her husband had two wives? It's always a bad idea. Just so you know. When I was 13 years old, I had just begun to mature. And I had realized at age 13 that I was far too much man for any one woman. And I remember saying to God, why can't we have multiple wives the way that the people in the Old Testament did? Because I just thought, you know, why should I have to be limited to one? Okay? I mean, I'm not just a young man. I'm a young man. You understand? And I just felt like, you know, it'd be so cool to be able to practice polygamy the way that the patriarchs did. They had multiple wives. And it was one of the first times in my life that God spoke to me. It wasn't audible. It wasn't something I heard with my ear. It was just such a vivid thought that was clearly not me that I knew who it was. And the thought was this. If that is what would have really made you happy, I would have planned it that way. I thought, wow. Wow. Yeah. See, God could have designed it so that there was Adam and Eve and Cynthia and Joanna and... I mean, He could have. He could have planned it that way. But instead, God planned Adam and Eve, and said, for this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, not wives, and the two, not three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, the two shall become one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let man not separate. God's plan from the beginning, as clearly presented in Scripture, Old and New Testament, was one man and one woman committed to each other for life. That's the plan.
Well, then how come all those people in the Old Testament had multiple wives?
Because every single one of them was a sinner. They were all sinners. They were all sinners.
Well, looks like God still blessed them.
Well, if God didn't bless sinners, who would He bless? Cattle? You know? Like, these people are all a mess. I'm going to have to bless the cows. I mean, yes, the people in the Old Testament often practiced multiple wives. But that doesn't make it the plan. Okay? How many of you have ever done something and it didn't exactly turn out the way you planned? Okay? Did you know that if you have other people trying to implement your plan, there's even a higher likelihood of that happening? Okay? I'm just telling you from personal experience, even wonderful people to whom you communicate your plan will sometimes not do things exactly the way you intended. And God says, this is the way it's supposed to be. And we keep coloring outside the lines. And God could just go and fry us all. But He's chosen not to. Instead, He has chosen to redeem sinful people. And not only forgive us, but change us. So that eventually we will be perfectly conformed to His likeness. Meanwhile, however, we should not make the mistake of assuming that when God doesn't go and fry us, it's because He's pleased with whatever we're up to. Okay? See, I literally had a friend back in those same teen years who told me, well, I just prayed that if God didn't want me to do this, He'd stop me. That's not the way it works. I mean, God could do that if He wanted to do that. But what my friend was saying is, I'm going to do something that I know I shouldn't do, but I'm going to blame God for the fact that I did it because God didn't stop me. I want you to understand, God graciously gives us His Word to teach us and instruct us and change the way we view things so that we will learn to walk in glad obedience. But if you think that your excuse on Judgment Day for the way that you lived is going to be the fact that God didn't stop you, you're going to find out on Judgment Day you're not the judge. Is that clear? You're not the judge. And the judge has told us ahead of time, there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end is destruction. Broad is the way that leads to destruction, Jesus said, and many travel on it. Narrow is the way that leads to life, and very few people find it. Well, what is the narrow way? Jesus said, I am the way, and the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, in this passage, several key points, just as we're getting started here. This woman was weeping and praying, but the religious leader of her day, Eli the priest, completely misconstrued what was going on. She was a sober, broken-hearted woman crying out to God in such a way that she knew God could hear, but her intended audience was not people. She wasn't going to the priest and saying, please talk to God for me. She was talking directly to God. But the priest misconstrued what was going on and falsely accused her. He didn't go to her and say, can I help you? What's going on here? He assumed that he knew, and he was wrong. totally misconstrued the situation. Okay? That is a warning to all of us. We all have the capacity to look at somebody else and think we know what's going on and misjudge their behavior. Be careful. Because Eli the priest was totally wrong in his assessment of her. And so, without knowing what was going on, but assuming that he knew what was going on, he rebukes her. Careful. We have the capacity to do that. And by the way, you don't have to be a grown-up to do that. It's possible for students, for young people, for children, to think they know what's going on. I know what that adult's doing. I know. And we completely misjudge. Often. Be careful. Be careful. Adults can misjudge other adults. Adults can misjudge children. Children can misjudge children. And children can misjudge adults. Be careful. Eli got it wrong. And he was an adult. And a priest. A high priest. So, he rebukes her. And her response is to say, "You old fat fool. You don't even discipline your children and you've completely misunderstood what's going on with me. How dare you even talk to me? Go deal with your own family." Now, if she'd said that, he was old, he was fat, and sometimes he behaved foolishly, including the fact that he failed to discipline his sons. More about that later. But she didn't respond to him. Do you ever want to do that when somebody accuses you falsely? You know, somebody says something about you and it's not even true, and you want to come back and tell them a thing or two? She didn't do that. She respectfully responded to him and said, "Please, don't think that I'm some wicked person who got drunk." Now, what does that tell us? It's wicked to get drunk. It's forbidden by God. There is no excuse for drunkenness. Well, you know, it just kind of runs in our family. We just like to tie one on every now and then. You know, weekend rolls around and football's on TV and I've got a 12-pack right here. It's just, you know, it's what we do. That's what a lot of people do. But it's wrong. Drunkenness is a sin. Well, you know, when you're young and, you know, you go up to college, you're just kind of feeling your oats, you're just trying to have a good time, and it's wrong. It's wrong. It's a sin. Don't do it. You never have to do it. It's wrong. Got it? She says, "Don't think that I'm a wicked woman. That's not what's going on here. I have been crying out to God. The reason my lips were moving is not because I'm just mumbling into the air. I'm talking with the ruler of the universe and I'm pleading with him to do something for me." Well, Eli, feeling a bit chastened at that point, said, "Well, go in peace and may God grant your request." And God did. Now, did God do it because the priest said so? No. God did it because God is God. But God gave the priest the blessing of being able to say so. And God gave this woman the blessing of a child. It was a beautiful thing. It wasn't a miraculous birth. It says that her husband lay with her and she conceived. Okay? This isn't the virgin birth in the Old Testament. This is a married woman who previously was unable to have children because the Lord had closed her womb, and now she was able to have children because the Lord opened her womb. God has power over our body. You understand that? God has power over that. And God can prevent us from doing something that is very natural and normal. And God can also enable us to do something that is natural and normal. And if you think that your body is just this little result of evolution, and, you know, it's just the way genetically it came out. When our oldest son was born with severe handicaps, the genetic counseling people explained to us that whereas before he was born, the chances of having a child with spina bifida, 1 in 500. Once we'd had a child with spina bifida, the chances for us became 1 in 21. Okay, that's a pretty dramatic change in probability. And I said, well, I want to thank you. Appreciate your wanting to give us the best information you have. But we do not believe that the universe is governed by chance. We believe that our child was knit together in his mother's womb, that God has a special plan for our son. We still believe that today. He's 35 years old. He's got medical challenges, and immediately after I leave here, I'm going to be taking him to the hospital because of a skin breakdown. He's got a pressure sore, and it's gone from being the size of a quarter to being the size of the palm of my hand, while the nurses have been coming to the house to take care of him twice a week. That's a problem. That's a problem. But let me tell you something. God could fix that in an instant. God may have somebody he wants us to meet at the hospital. And if the thing had gotten all better, we wouldn't be going. So we've learned just to pray hard and go with the flow. Because God has a plan. Now, this woman prayed. God answered. And now she's got what she longed for, a son. But she remembers. Her prayer was, God, please remember me. Please remember me. Well, God remembered her, gave her a son, and now she's got to remember what she promised. She's got to remember her prayer. And that is, God, if you give me this child, I'll give him back to you. And so she has to go to the temple and offer this child back to the Lord. When the child's very little, she says, I'm not ready to go to the temple. I'm going to wait until I wean him. I don't know how long she nursed this boy. But it was a 3-year-old heifer that she brought with her. It may well be she waited till he was 3 years old. Okay? My oldest grandbaby is 4 years old. And let me tell you, I cannot imagine taking a 4-year-old off to another part of the country and dropping that 4-year-old off for somebody else to raise. You know this tore her heart out. This was an exceedingly painful thing to do. Don't miss the pain and the drama of this story. But understand something else. This little boy Samuel, he didn't know what was going on. Suppose you're 3 years old and mama takes you somewhere that you've never been before and introduces you to a man you've never met before and says, this is where you're going to live from now on and I'll come and see you once a year. What chance does a kid have in life when his mother gives him away at age 3 and he has to grow up living among strangers he's not even biologically related to? What chance does that kid have? Well, if he is like Samuel and he trusts in the Lord, he not only has a good life, he becomes the leader of the nation religiously and politically. He becomes the greatest man of his time. And this book, 1 Samuel, is named for him, as is 2 Samuel. In all of human history, he is one of the greatest men ever. So if you look at his story, you realize that sometimes having difficulty in early childhood does not have to mean a bad life. Many of the people God most powerfully used in history were people who spent a significant part of their childhood or youth away from their biological family, growing up somewhere else that was part of God's special plan for them. Let me just name a few. Joseph. Remember him? Joseph. He was sold as a slave by his brothers and ended up in Egypt. But God used him to become the ruler of Egypt and to save the life of his family and many, many, many other people. Moses. Moses grew up in Pharaoh's court, separated from his family from the time that he was weaned. And yet, God used him to bring deliverance to the people of Israel. I don't know what God has in store for you. And I'm not telling you that you're all going to grow up to be the rulers of this country. What I'm telling you is that you can sit around feeling sorry for yourself because you're having to be away from home. Or you can realize that God has placed you where He wants you for His purposes to make you the great, wonderful servant of the Lord that you will be if you trust and obey. Is that clear?
But this isn't what I would have planned.
Well, I guarantee it's not what Samuel would have planned. I guarantee you he missed his mom. And yet he learned to trust in God. And God used him to bless many people. Is that clear? We're not going to read it right now. But Hannah's prayer that follows in chapter 2. Is, just look at the start of it. Then Hannah prayed and said, I am miserable because I am leaving my child in the temple or in the tabernacle. Is that what she said? Is that what she said? Oh no, she said, my heart rejoices in the Lord. In the Lord, my horn is lifted high. My mouth boasts over my enemies, for I delight in your deliverance. There is no one holy like the Lord. There is no one besides you. There is no rock like our God. Look at the verse 6. The Lord brings death and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and raises up. The Lord sends poverty and wealth. He humbles and He exalts. He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the needy from the ash heap. Wow. Verse 11. Then Elkanah went home to Ramah, but the boy ministered before the Lord under Eli the priest. God willing, we'll pick it up there tomorrow. But I want you to understand something. God has a plan for you. God has a plan for you. And if you will trust in Him and do what He says, you will be blessed beyond what you can imagine.